And joining me right now here on the Mark Moses Show to go over the latest on UCF athletics. This guy does a great job, is the play-by-play man for the softball team for the Knights. And he also does a great job with Black and Gold Banneret. He's my good friend, Eric Lopez. Eric, how you doing today?
Doing well, Mark. Doing well. It's we're getting closer to April. We're getting closer to WrestleMania. We're getting closer to NFL draft. We're getting closer to postseason and all sports and basketball and hockey and softball. So it's a good time.
Let's start with basketball. They end the season with a winning record, a couple games above 500. They're rewarded with a home game in the NIT and then lose to their rival in University of South Florida. What are your thoughts after the season ended that way?
Yeah, it was rough. Obviously, they got a tough draw. South Florida clearly motivated there. They felt they got up for that game. UCF was three players short, as it turns out, in that game. C.J. Walker didn't play. So, South Florida got hot. They hit nine threes in that first half, but scored 49 points. And UCF just playing from behind all game long. And tough to win that way. So that was disappointing because I think overall it was a really strong season. The way they competed in the Big 12, the toughest conference in college basketball, according to the net, according to the RPI, any metrics you want to check, look at. And they, I thought they had tremendous success, all things considered, seven conference wins. In the regular season, you had a conference tournament win. I think they earned an NIT home game. It's just unfortunate, the NIT tends to go very geography friendly. South Florida obviously was geared up for that, and, they left some people, I think, with a bad taste in their mouth. But it is what it is. That happens sometimes in basketball. So thought it deserved a better fate. But overall, for me personally, it does not change, I think, the success that this year one was in the Big 12 for basketball.
All right, you say seven conference wins. What does it take to make the tournament? 10? Is that the benchmark? Because we had like a TCU kind of do that.
I think 9-10 would probably have been the number. I think it's a combination of things. I think, first of all, how do you do a non-conference? You got to win at least maybe a marquee non-conference game or two. Could have been a different help there, I think, moving forward. But certainly, usually, historically, if you go 500 in the Big 12, you're pretty much a lock to get to the tournament. Now, we'll see what happens with the changes in the Big 12 next year. But 500, I think the last decade, if you've been 500 in the Big 12, you're in the tournament. Even if you're 8-10, for example, in the Big 12, usually you're right there on the line. Now, next year, they're going to 20 games. They're expanding. You've got Arizona, Arizona State, Colorado, Utah coming in, which is not going to make the league any easier. Oklahoma and Texas leave, but I would say UCF, if UCF maybe wins, for example, one of the BYU games, maybe they win one of the Cincinnati games, maybe they win the Iowa State home game, they're probably in the tournament. I think it's a couple games away. Yeah, they were that close.
Well, you're there, Lopez, Black Eagle Banneret. What are your thoughts on Johnny Dawkins going into the offseason? Because when I look at my Twitter feed, there's mixed emotions and opinions on him right now.
Well, I think that's a result of some fans that are not college. I don't believe, Mark, that there's a percentage of UCF fans that just treat every sport like they think it's football and they've shown up, since 2017, so they think losing's unacceptable and don't understand the concept of things. It is hard to win in basketball, much harder in basketball for UCF, that is, than it is in football. I think the resources haven't been there all this time from a finances. If there was a stat, one of the ESPN basketball analysts, Mark Adams, posted all the finances that the Sweet 16 teams, and they're all spending like up to $8 million to as low as $10 million to about $30 million. UCF never spent that much money on basketball. And I just think that there's a percentage of fans there that aren't really basketball fans, but just kind of hop in there and act like, well, we should win because we're UCF. Yeah, well, that doesn't work that way. We don't have a great tradition. At one point, this basketball program was the worst Division I basketball program in the 80s. The history's not there compared to Blue Bloods like the Kansas and the North Carolinas and the Dukes of the world. I think Johnny's done a very good job considering what he has to work with. They made the NCAA tournament. They won an NCAA tournament game under his watch. They've now made three NITs. He's turned this program to really arguably a top 80, top 100 program consistently, which was not the case prior to his arrival. Yeah, would you like to make the NCAAs? Of course, no doubt about it. But I just don't think that the support from a finance standpoint has been there. I don't think the support's been there from a fan standpoint up until this year, where all of a sudden, like, it was a cool thing to go to the Big 12 games. We'll see if that continues. But I think he's done a very good job. I'd like to see what happens if they get the resources that they will now with the Big 12 money, when that kicks in the next year, where they get a full share. But I just think some of the fans are unrealistic on those things. And I think, by the way, what you see in the social media, I think it's 5-10%. I think that 90% of the fan base understands what Johnny's had to deal work with and the job he's done.
We're here, Derek Lopez. Okay, the tournament overall. We have every number one seed and every two seed still alive. A lot of big teams are there trying to get to the Final Four. Do you like that for the tournament this season?
I personally do. I understand, you know, some people love the Cinderella, the upsets. You know, like Oakland beating Kentucky was huge, did a big number. I think if you would have, what I would say is, you know, NC State's the 11 seed. I think if instead of NC State you would have had Oakland in the Sweet 16, that would have been perfect, something like that. But I'm excited about the matchups here. As somebody who actually follows the sport the whole year, to see Houston play Duke, North Carolina play Alabama, yeah, I want to see the best of the best after a while. I've always felt that the tournament, if you told television and fans, at a truth serum,
They
want to see upsets the first couple rounds. Like last year, I got to see Furman upset Virginia in person when I covered the tournament here in Orlando. I know you did not like that. As from your background, from back days, from your Virginia days. But that was exciting. But I think fans, once you get to the Sweet 16, Elite Eight, Final Four round, you want to see the best of the best. And I think that's what we're going to end up having here, I think, as we get forward into this tournament. Now, I will say, I think the first two rounds have been very blasé. It has not been that amazing because, you know, we have high standards for the tournament. But I am looking forward to the Sweet 16 and the Elite Eight rounds, probably, you know, first in a few years. I think every matchup, Gonzaga versus, you know, Purdue is intriguing to me. So if you follow this more year-round, I think you're excited from that standpoint. Cause, hey, I followed this the season. It was worth it. Cause if you have too many upsets, you almost feel like, man, I wasted my time following the season. You know, so I personally like it. But I understand how some people maybe wish they had a Cinderella or two mid-major there still alive.
Okay, here's your Cinderellas. San Diego State, who went to the championship game, right?
Yep.
Last year.
Yep.
They're alive, yep. So maybe they're just a good program now. And yep. You brought up NC State. They'd win 5 games in 5 days. Like, and then they keep winning. That's it. Dude, is your bracket for the Final Four, are you still alive to try to win your bracket challenge?
So here's the funny thing. I have not filled out a bracket in a couple years because usually I'm broadcasting. So the last thing I need is I don't want to be distracted when I'm broadcasting games. Like this past weekend, I was broadcasting softball against #2 Texas. So I was able to focus on that. And if I have a bracket filled out, now all of a sudden it's like I'm going to be constantly checking scores. And I just didn't think that was functional. Having said that, had I filled out officially a bracket, I would have definitely done okay, but I would have lost like Kentucky. I would have had Kentucky Sweet 16 right now. I probably would have had Kentucky in the Elite Eight, so I probably would have lost there. But I would have had Carolina. I would have had Houston still alive deep in the tournament. I would have still had Connecticut. I would have picked Connecticut was my pick to repeat, and so I'm sticking with that.
I like that I wasted my time watching the SEC championship game 2 weeks ago between Florida and Auburn. And I thought they both played great, and they both got bounced in the first round.
Right, see? That's the negative of the upsets. You feel like you wasted your time. You're right. Auburn losing to Yale. Florida lost to Colorado. It was a crazy game.
Yeah.
Buzzer there. But you're right. That's the thing. If you watch the whole season, and then all of a sudden all these upsets happen, you're like, well, why did I just waste 3-4 months? Because, I mean, I could have just shown up in March and watched this and just let it unfold. Because nobody's watching Oakland play basketball in November, December.
No.
So, yeah, I know what you mean on that. I also think, by the way, this is kind of what we're going to see on the football side in the playoff. I think anybody First of all, you're not going to see maybe one non-power conference team represented in the playoff, and I think they'll get smoked most years in the opening round. So I think you're going to see pretty chalky tournaments when it comes to football. Similar to what we saw. This is actually one of the chalkier ones from the men's side in a while.
Here's how I'll remember this regular season, Eric Lopez. There was so many court stormings that a Duke player got injured, so we debated for 2 days, should we get rid of court storming? That's what I'll remember.
Right, and I think that's like 15. Yeah, that's, we're still going to storm the court. I mean, obviously, he was fine and all that. So you're right. I mean, I'll remember UCF obviously upsetting Kansas and storming the court. And I hate when fans look back 2-3 months later. Well, you know, it turns out Kansas wasn't as, you know, their best team ever. I'm like, I don't care. That was fun at the moment. Live for the moment, man. Are you kidding me? Like, stop nitpicking stuff.
Please. All right, let's go to softball real quick. We're here there, Lopez. He does a great job, like he said. What was that like, Texas showing up and doing those games?
Well, it was fun, man. Texas is really good. It's a well-rounded team, ranked number 2 in the country at 3 sellouts. First time in program history, they sold out a weekend series.
Nice.
3 games. That was cool. Atmosphere was fun. Texas was really good. We got some good games. UCF was right there with them. Could have easily won 2 of those games. Didn't. They didn't get those big clutch hits. That's been a bugaboo for them over the last few weeks since they've entered conference play. We're finding out that, you know, I've talked about how difficult men's basketball is. I think from a women's sports standpoint, there's no stronger sport that the Big 12 has than softball. We're seeing that with the fact that Oklahoma and Texas are 1-2 in the country. Oklahoma State's in the top 10. Mm-hmm. Baylor's in the top 20. And UCF is finding that out the hard way. They have faced some great pitching. Their offense has struggled a bit. And as a result, they've lost their last 7. But again, they've lost to 7 games to 3 teams that are in the top 20 in the country. Kansas, who they won a series from the open Big 12 play, just entered the top 25. So welcome to Big 12 country. It's difficult. It's a challenge. I think the fan base, Mark, and I want you to speak to this. You cover Florida in the SEC, so you're used to this. UCF fans are not. They're used to dominating in the American and not losing very much. Those days are over. Doesn't mean you can't be really good, but when you're playing in a conference like the Big 12 or the SEC, you're going to have losing streaks. You're going to have bad weekends where you get swept. You're going to have tough seasons where you don't, maybe you're not 500 in conference play, regardless of the sport. And I think UCF fans are learning that. I think everybody involved with UCF is learning that this year in the Big 12.
Well, you brought this up earlier about basketball. You had, 7 conference wins? You don't have to win. I know this is stupid to say. You don't have to win the conference.
Correct.
So you're right. It's absolutely different. That's like when you go to the college football playoff. All right. You don't need to go 11-0 or 12-0.
Right.
I mean, there's going to be a team in the SEC, kind of like, you know, how like Ole Miss every year where they have 2 losses, but they got 11 wins. They'll be in the playoff now moving forward. That's what it's going to be.
Correct. Correct. 100% agree. You know, and obviously you see softball's 14-14, so some fans are freaking out. And I point out they're still 45 in the RPI, and they've done this with the 7th strongest schedule in the country. 7. That's how strong. And they still haven't played Oklahoma yet. They still haven't played Baylor yet. So they're going to probably finish with a top 10, top 15 toughest schedule in the country. Not only, Mark, has softball played the toughest schedule in the history of the program, and this is our 23rd season, I would say it is the strongest, toughest schedule that any UCF sport has ever played. No UCF sport has literally played the number 1, number 2 teams in the country this season. No teams have ever played 2 top 10 teams back-to-back like UCF softball has. So,
cool.
And I still think they can make the tournament. Obviously, they got to fix some things offensively. They got to get going. But, you know, they got a big series this weekend against Texas Tech. If I get fans react to me when I post it on Twitter, like they have the staff of strength, like, well, who cares if you got to win some games, though? I'm like, well, obviously, you got to win some games. If they don't win some games, they're not going to make the tournament. Thank you, Captain Obvious. But the point I'm making is you still have everything in front of you. This is not the American. If you lost 7 in a row in the American, your season's done.
Yeah.
But in the Big 12, you still got a lot to play for. So I think this is an educational year for, I think, some of the fan base as well. And I think it's, quite frankly, I think it's educational for everybody at UCF, administrators, coaches, players, because I think sometimes I think some of the athletes I've noticed, Mark, have kind of been shell-shocked by because they've never gone through this before, Mark. This is all new to a lot of these people.
Well, you're there, Lopez. Did you call a UCF baseball game recently?
I did. It was a week ago, last Tuesday, as a matter of fact. So this is the funny story. I was called in Monday morning, that Monday morning before that Tuesday baseball game. Hey, can you fill in on baseball? Because men's basketball found out late Sunday night they had to host an NIT game, so they had to scramble. And then obviously the person that normally does baseball, Mark Daniels, who's the voice of UCF Athletics, he's got to do men's basketball. So they needed somebody to pinch hit, literally, pun intended, to do baseball. And they're like, hey, can you do baseball? And I'm like, sure. So I literally had about 20 hours notice to prepare for a baseball broadcast, but it was fun. It was enjoyable. I always enjoyed doing baseball. So, but yeah, that was kind of an interesting adventure to wake up to that phone call and say, hey, can you do baseball? I'm like, sure, no problem. Welcome to broadcasting, folks.
And then I can see you're just sitting there, just looking at these stats, right? You're trying to get all the names. You're a pro. Cause on Twitter, I saw a clip. I think it was a home run, and I go, wait a minute. I know that guy. I know that voice. He does a great job.
Yeah. Andrew Sundin hit a big home run in the bottom of the eighth to win that game. Baseball's doing very well. They are doing solid. They just came from winning 2 out of 3 against Kansas. They're hosting Texas Tech this weekend. Rich Wallace, the alum, is in his first year as baseball head coach. And, you know, they're doing very well. They're now 4-5 in the conference. They're in the top 10 in the RPI. It's very early for baseball in RPI. But this program hasn't been to the NCAA tournament in 2017. And the beauty of the Big 12, which is the number 3 baseball strongest conference, is if you keep winning weekend series, you're going to play in the NCAA tournament. So I think there's some optimism there. They've turned the roster over. There's 23 new faces, 17 transfers. But they so far, so good.
We're there, Lopez, Black and Gold Banneret. Let's go to football then for UCF. They're in spring practice. What do you want to see? I know limited viewability, if that's the word, visibility. But what do you want to see from spring practice here for UCF?
Well, I think the exciting thing is they're letting a lot of the players talk. KJ Jefferson spoke to the media about it a couple weeks ago, so we'll see as this continues. Obviously, Ted Roof, co-defensive coordinator. They got a lot of new faces in the linebacking position. How does the defense look? Can they get better? Because I think this offense with KJ Jefferson at quarterback is going to be dynamic. I know people are wondering about who replaces Javon Baker at wide receiver. That will be a good question. I think Townsend will be in the mix. There'll become some receivers. So I think those are the two things. Who replaces Javon Baker to play alongside Kobe Hudson and be that consistent threat at the wide receiver for KJ Jefferson? And how does the defense overall look with some of the new faces, especially at the linebacking position, with Ted Roof now as the co-defensive coordinator coming in to help Addison Williams? I think those are the two things to look at. And just, obviously you can't see it because practice is not open. There will be obviously a spring game, which you never learn anything from those things. But I think when you talk to players around practice and things like that, you might get a sense of how things are going. So I think those are two things to follow throughout for the spring.
Are you confident, and there's no wrong answers to this, are you confident the new starting quarterback for UCF can at least play 9 or 10 games this year? Because we've had a problem at the quarterback position with durability.
It's a fair question. UCF has not had a full season of a starting quarterback go the whole season to play every game since, I think, 2017. Even Mackenzie Milton missed a game or two, a couple, obviously, in 18. So, yeah, I think it's a fair question. But, yeah, I actually am the most confident. KJ is a much bigger, stronger guy, much thicker. He's more like that Tim Tebow physical type of a quarterback. In other words, he's a tough guy to get down, whereas Plumlee wasn't as big like that, so he was more injury-prone. Jefferson has been pretty healthy for the most part when he's been at Arkansas, so, yeah, I actually do feel much more confident with Jefferson from a health standpoint than I've had recent years at the quarterback position.
Okay. Are you going to the spring game?
No.
No? You're not doing it? You're not.
I have others that could do that. Kyle Nash loves spring games. He lives for those things, so I'm not going to take that away from him.
Are we going to the Swamp this fall for Florida UCF?
Oh, well, that's definitely, yeah, we're definitely doing that. That's a no-brainer.
Should we get hotels now before it gets too crazy?
Might be too late. Might want to have to look up Ocala or something, man. I think Gainesville's out of the picture at that point. Or now the tricky thing about that is I hope we find out. I don't know if we will. I hope we find out maybe in the summer what time kickoff is, because that dictates a lot of things. Because let's say the game's like at 3:30 or a day game, then that's an easy back-and-forth trip. I've done that many a time with softball. So I might just do that instead of staying over. But who knows? If it's a 7, 8 o'clock kick, then, yeah, you may strongly consider staying overnight.
If I'm the Gators, I'm putting it prime time at night, like 7, 8 o'clock.
Well, TV will decide that. I'm interested to see what time they do give that game. And I wonder, my guess is they'll wait till during the season because they want to see how Florida looks and they want to see how UCF looks. So that would be my guess.
The two fan bases want to see that game, okay, in the state of Florida. It's going to be fascinating. Let's end with this. Okay, WrestleMania is almost here, buddy. I know you've been waiting months for this. Are you excited for the main events for night one and night two now?
I'm excited for the whole show. I think we have the potential for the greatest WrestleMania of all time. It's there. It's in the cards. It's on the table. I think as we talk, I can make the case they're just coming off maybe one of the best Monday Night Raws they've had in years. Years. With The Rock, Mark, in the main event attacking Cody Rhodes. And leaving him a bloody mess in the rain in Chicago. It's fascinating. I cannot wait. I'm fascinated to see how they're going to play this out. You got McIntyre and Rollins with CM Punk kind of thrown in there. You got Rhea Ripley and Becky Lynch. Sami Zayn and Gunther. Jay versus Jimmy. I mean, this is a stacked show. And I'm excited because that weekend, I have softball. UCF is hosting BYU. Well, BYU doesn't play Sundays. So my series will be Thursday, Friday, Saturday. Saturday is going to be an early game because it's getaway day. It'll be probably around a noon or 1 o'clock first pitch, noon first pitch, I believe, which means I'll be home in plenty of time to watch both nights uninterrupted.
All right.
Live, baby. I'm fired up.
Okay.
Can't wait.
Here's my pick. The first night, where it's going to be the tag team. So it's Roman Reigns and The Rock versus Cody and Seth Rollins.
Yeah.
I think The Rock and Roman is going to win that. I think they're going to win.
Agree.
They're going to win to that. So then at least The Rock wins something. Then the next night, everything is stacked against Cody. Everything. Yeah. And then he's going to win. That's my pick.
100% agree.
So
I'm on the same page.
Is it going to be someone will help Cody on Sunday night to win the belt?
That's a good question. I think people will be involved. And I think when you say, well, people help Cody, I think they will help him in that regard of the bloodline will get involved. And as a result, there will be people. Like, for example, I do think Seth Rollins will help. I don't think Seth Rollins will turn on him necessarily. I think Jay will help. It's kind of similar to the ending from last year. If you remember last year's main event, the Usos got involved, and then Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn got involved, and you're like, oh, this is awesome, this is great. Except Solo, nobody accounted for Solo Sikoa, and that cost Cody. So the question is, who is going to account for Solo Sikoa in this deal? I'm intrigued by this. Call me crazy on this, and I might be way off base on this. I know he's under contract with AEW, but doesn't Dustin Rhodes need to get involved in this?
Dude, I said that a year ago. It would be the pop for that would be amazing if that Gold Dust
music.
With
all this talk of the family and the mom and the dad, I mean, even The Rock a couple weeks ago referenced his brother as being a future Hall of Famer. I understand he's under contract at AEW, but you're telling me, come on, for one night, can't you come up with an agreement? Let him be in the stands. All big brawl breaks out, and all of a sudden, he pops out of nowhere to come save the mom, right? Like, oh, it would be emotional,
awesome.
Man. It would be incredible. Come on. Tony Khan, Triple H, make something work, man. I know they've done stuff in the past where I think guys have done interviews and documentaries, even though they're under AEW contract. So why not Like, Dustin's not doing anything relevant right now in AEW, at least not in front of the camera. I know he does stuff behind the scenes, but let him be in Philly. Let him help his brother win. Let him celebrate with his brother, please. That's my request, Mark. And, please, make it happen. I mean, come on.
And he comes out as Gold Dust. That's my other thing.
I don't know if we need to do that, but man, whatever. But I do think there will be people there to help. I'm curious. I agree with your concept. I think, yes, I think Rock and Reigns win. I think there will be a whole bunch of, you know, stuff going on during that match. It's going to look like Cody's done. He's going to lose, and then he finds a way to somehow win. And I think there's going to be a huge celebration in the ring because the bloodline reign is over, and I think all the wrestlers will celebrate with Cody. That's how I think it'll end.
Eric Lopez calling his shot. My man, thank you so much for helping. Have a great day.
Anytime, Mark.